Welcome to From Earning to Learning, the podcast where we talk about all things education. I'm your host, Dave Frangiosa. Welcome to another episode of From Earning to Learning. I have with me today Julie Stern and Kayla Duncan, amazing educators and two of the authors behind Corwin's best-selling book, Learning That Transfers. Welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I think the book is absolutely outstanding. It's a book that I wish I had when I was making changes to my course and my curriculum. But before we get to that, just give me a little background on your journey to the book, Learning That Transfers. So how'd you get there?
Sure. I'll jump in there because I feel like it's a bit of a, it's the book I always wanted to write, even though it's my fourth book. And, you know, I was a director of curriculum. I was a social studies teacher for many years. And, you know, I wanted to figure out how we prepare students for an ever-changing world without overhauling everything that we do. How can we students need to know certain things. So I'll give a quick example of like just some things they just need to know. For some reason, my second grader, my own child, missed the calendar. Like, I don't know if it's COVID, I don't know what, but like he just really has no idea the order of the months. So the kindergartner, his brother, knows better than he does. And so that's just something, you know, people should just have a rough reference in their heads. At the same time, we know that the way in which we went to school is not going to prepare this generation for the future they will inherit. So how do we do that? What's the rub? So that's kind of been my quest and continues to be. And so I wrote two books called Tools for Teaching Conceptual Understanding, an elementary version and a secondary version. I started training in Kayla's district. Kayla sat through probably, I don't know, 20 days worth of my sessions. And she's an instructional coach and she would implement once I would leave. I would come back to her district a lot, but she would do the in-between parts. And so, you know, we've known each other for quite some time. And then we put in the proposal for this book in like 2018. And then my editor said to me, "Hey, Julie, would you be willing to write a book with John Hattie, mm-hmm. Doug Fisher, and Nancy Fry?" And I was like, yes. So I wrote Visible Learning for Social Studies, kind of putting this proposed idea on hold for a little while, which of course was a great decision because a lot of the ideas from Visible Learning, as well as my first two books, Tools for Teaching Conceptual Understanding, kind of were percolating in there. I met Trevor Alio, our other author on it. And then Christopher O is my longtime co-author. She's on my first two books with me. So that's the four of us on our little team who wrote Learning That Transfers. So Kayla, I don't know what you want to add to it, but that's a little bit of the background in getting to that.
Yeah, how I got connected with Julie was I do a lot of work with innovative learning or personalized learning in my district and schools that I was supporting and coaching. They really wanted to hit in on the authentic learning, but they wanted mm-hmm. it to be meaningful and not glittery projects. Or we had a lot of passion projects and Genius Hour, which are great things for creativity, but they felt like they wanted something within the content as well. Mm-hmm. And so going through, we were looking at who could support this work? What does authentic learning mean to us? And so Julie was one of the folks that we were checking out to see, and it worked out that the teachers that I support were like, yeah, that's what we're going for. So that's kind of how I got looped into Transfer, and Transfer is kind of that next level of authenticity, if you will, that isn't a side project. Like it's the real deal. It's embedded in instruction. So that's kind of how I got hooked up with Julie, and now I'm along for the ride.
All right. Well, you know, it's a great ride and you're doing awesome stuff. You know, you have the course, you now have your Twitter community. Mm-hmm. So like you got a lot of good stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about that where people can get in touch with you. So the book itself, there's tons of practical applications. So there's, you know, a lot of research behind it. I mean, you only have 5 pages of references, you know, so, but like, you know, we'll let it slide. There's a ton of practical information in here. So one of the things that stuck out to me were the 7 shifts, right? Mm. And, you know, mindset shifts, those are for me, they're key to any change. Mm-hmm. So You know, describe a little bit, like, what's in these shifts, those mindsets, the things that need to change in order for this to be successful.
I'll just jump in just to say, I love that you asked that because, you know, that chapter was the last chapter that was written. So it's chapter two, but I just want to give a little bit of history behind that. And then of course, Kayla can talk about what about those shifts. But that our editor, her name is Eliza Erickson. She said to us, you know what, you guys, I feel like there's something missing. And it's already a behemoth of a book. But it was like right before the deadline. I mean, I'm talking like a week. She says, I feel like that before you even jump into all this, you have to have some mindset shifts. And she kind of identified a few places in the book that we could move to a potential chapter two. And I think, Kayla, I think you wrote many of those. It was from chapter eight. Well, what was chapter seven and now chapter eight. And we moved it up to chapter two. So, Kayla, you wrote a lot of these about the role of the students, the role of the teacher. So I would love for you to speak to that, the role of curriculum, the role of instruction, the role of assessments, the role of leaders and parents, and the role of the larger community. Because if you think your job is to, you know, make sure kids memorize a whole bunch of stuff, then none of this is going to work. If you think assessments are a tool to motivate kids to work hard, like as some sort of carrot or stick, this is not going to work. So, you know, it was our editor who said that. So I remember just sitting on my parents' deck and I was like, okay, let's do this. We're going to write a chapter in a week. And we did it. It was exhausting, but I'm so glad we did. So just a little background of like how that happened. It was quite last minute, but I think the shifts are really nice. And yeah, I mean, Kayla, what do you want to say about that? I like we have some downloadables. So we'll make sure that we link those in the show notes, but that was a very fun chapter to write.
Yeah. So we were thinking about, we had a lot of, as you mentioned, action-oriented pieces, takeaways, but before you get to action, there's this culture that has to be present, whether it's your classroom, ideally it's the whole school or the whole system or district. And so thinking about how to establish a culture of transfer, these shifts, that's what came to mind. These shifts are what we want to see in place to establish that culture, because then you're ready, the environment's primed for students, teachers, parents, the community, the whole system to thrive in this effort of moving towards transfer, and that being the goal. And so with the shifts, we tried to think of all the different parts of the system. So all the different stakeholders, the components that go into instruction. And this was our just ideation of, okay, what does that future of learning look like? What does that system look like if transfer is the goal? And so for students, we want them to be directors of their own learning. And we have this illustration of, it's not chaos, you know, like there's still, the teacher still has input, but students need to have ownership. We want that motivation to be there. Teachers, instead of you're planning a lesson or you're implementing a lesson, they're designers. You know, really empower teachers to feel like they have, there's an art to teaching. And so what design, what do you want to create? And so that mindset and trying to empower students and teachers to think broadly of their role and their influence in the system is there. And then rethinking instruction and assessment, as Julie mentioned, is going to be on the test or it's 10 points off. You know, like those are things that, and not promoting learning, they're promoting compliance maybe. And so we just really wanted to think about how do these pieces work and how can we use them for this broader goal of curriculum and instruction? And we know it can't be done in a silo. It can rarely happen just in a classroom. We need to be partners with the community, have that authenticity piece come in, to be partners with parents. Like so much that's happening with education right now, it's because that partnership or the breakdown of the communication, it's not there. And so it's really promoting that cohesive, we're all working for the benefit of our students. And so we really wanted all different facets of what would go into a culture of transfer so we could all move forward together.
And one of those, you had touched on it, was assessment. And that stuck out to me. You know, that's something that I have a keen interest in. Mm-hmm. So when you talked about, not assessing what students know and can do, but whether they're having that organizing schema, mm-hmm. and the teachers to actually reflect on their impact on learning. And that's something that's really hard for teachers. Mm-hmm. And now I know you have a course around assessment. Is that mm-hmm. something that you touch on there? How, you know, teachers can actually reflect on their practice and the impact that it's having?
Yes, definitely. Go ahead, Kayla.
Yeah, no, with our assessment course, it's, we're showing how there's still merit to knowledge, to knowing facts and skills and some questions where you want to have a right answer, but also how to not make that the priority of assessments, how you can still have those components, but we really want to assess transfer to these novel situations, and that's where they have to have that schema. And so when we're planning assessments, we have multiple self-assessment options for teachers to reflect on their own practice mm-hmm. and think about what role do assessments play in their current setting and how can they make those shifts. And we really encourage people to think about what's best for their content, for their students, or like a safe starting point for them. So we're not telling everyone to these crazy dissimilar transfer projects that might seem overwhelming to some, but it's just an honest self-reflection of what is the role of assessments for you, and then how can we shift that practice closer to seeing formative assessment not as standalone pieces, but assessment and instruction are intertwined, and it's not just here's how the students did, but here's how I did when I taught this, when I did these lessons or designed these experiences, did they hit the mark or not? And for some students they might, for others they might not, and then we use that to adjust and keep moving towards that transfer goal.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell a story about when I was director of curriculum and we were writing the assessments as the curriculum team for this network of charter schools in DC. And we wrote the curriculum and we did all this training on pedagogy. And then we wrote the assessments because just that life, you know? So I know that that's not the ideal way that you do it. But I remember this was such a profound moment in my career. I sat with a world history teacher and I showed him the assessment that had transfer tasks on it. And even though it was completely aligned to the curriculum, the teachers even wrote what we call a blueprint. We talked briefly about that, and we've got these free resources on our website where we said the question is going to be multiple choice. The teacher actually wrote, I want a multiple choice question on this standard, on this, you know, like it was totally teacher, you know, sort of oriented and teacher voice in it. But when I showed him the final product, he said to me, Julie, I would have taught so differently if I would have known that this is the assessment. And I just thought that was such an aha for me, because what a great moment for me as an administrator to realize that even though I thought we were all going in the same direction, it wasn't until he saw that assessment. So what we had to do as a team is treat that first round as like a pilot. So, you know, even the students were like, what is this? Because we weren't doing in the class, we didn't do that shifts. We didn't do that chapter two. That chapter two didn't exist. Sort of like you said, Dave, it's that you wish this book existed. This book didn't exist whenever that occurred. And so I think the idea of assessing for transfer is so profound and so different that it requires so much building up. And so that assessments course that we offer is an advanced level course. And we require, people often write to us like, hey, we want to take this course. And I'm like, you can take it. You can give us the money for it if you want. But we are hit the ground running on week one with a unit plan around transfer, around conceptual understanding and transfer. We assume you're walking into this course with that unit plan. You've got a week to write it if you want to, but like that first week is kind of a review of conceptual learning and the ACT model and our sort of learning transfer style, which I can talk about as well. But that course is an advanced level course because you can't just like walk into this.
Yeah. So we're talking about shifts and like shifting mindsets. And I know you have the four levels of engagement. Hmm. And what I've noticed like with assessment is if you straddle a line between like I'm doing some things this way and some things another way, you know, it kind of misses the mark, and the the students have to split their mindset and they don't know how to approach either. Now, I've seen that with assessment. Are you seeing similar things with transfer? Like, would you suggest that, you know, people try to do a full course, and if that's not their tolerance, then scale back? Or are you like suggesting that they dip a toe in the water, try and do a lesson, and then build up to a unit? So, you know, what have you seen work best?
Great question. Great question. Kayla, do you want to take that one, or you want me to go with that one?
It's, I can share an approach that I feel like has worked well with, some elementary teachers I've worked with, and then also with math teachers that we've worked with together. It's, I typically suggest a week, and to think really simply about acquire understanding at the beginning of the week, try to have at least one task or experience where students are connecting things with a conceptual question midweek, and by the end of the week, have another task that's a bit more complex, and as the transfer task. And so thinking about a week doesn't seem like too much, but the conversations that result from the activities and the pieces that we put in place are typically enough to where we're like, okay, I want to do more and we can build on this. And so dipping a toe in to experience acquire, connect, transfer on a simple scale, I've typically gone with a week, and then we move up to a unit. And as a team of teachers, so there's a team that I've been working with, we're on our fifth year now, and we're mapping out all of their units, and we're looking across at overarching concepts, what we call disciplinary lenses. And it's because they've had that time to start simply and then work their way up that they feel confident and they're making those connections across their content. And so that's typically my approach. I don't know if Julie, if you've had different experiences, because it could work differently for different folks.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head as far as instruction, play with it in your classroom. Like, that's where we start. And that often is now, I think in the year 2022, it's more acceptable. But when I first started this journey in 2012, it was you write curriculum first. You write unit plans, you write course overviews, you write scope and sequence. You write out the enduring understandings, of course, like understanding by design was super, super popular when I was director of curriculum. And I was certified by a company to do curriculum alignment, all of these things. And so the notion of asking teachers to play with conceptual learning and transfer in the classroom was very counterculture at the time. But what happened, that was sort of out of necessity, because when I first became a consultant working with other schools and in my own school where I was director of curriculum, I was spending, I mean, I want to say 40 hours of curriculum writing. This is a massive undertaking, and we were really proud of it. And, you know, we paid teachers to come in the evening and the weekends, and we worked so hard. And so we're talking about 40 hours times the number of courses that we designed, right? Because that's how many humans we were having working on this. And then you go into the classroom and the teachers got like the same pedagogy that they always had. Even though the curriculum is quote unquote new and groundbreaking and amazing, they're doing the same stuff. And so that to me was so profound in my own practice that I just said, you know what, tomorrow. In fact, I was meeting this morning with a school that's potentially going to bring us on. And they said, okay, how do you deal with those grumpy secondary teachers? And I know, Dave, that your high school is your area. And I was like, yes, let me tell you about those typically grumpy secondary teachers. Is I'll just say, hey, what are you teaching today? And, you know, there was a teacher, one of my favorite stories is John. He says, Julie, you're not going to change me. I'm old school. Like as I walk into the classroom to meet this human, I love it. I love that he was just, I was like, thank you for just being right up front with me, you know, of where you are in your learning stance. He's like, you're not going to change me. I'm old school. So it's like, what are you teaching today? And he says probability. So I said, I think this is before I met you, Kayla. And Kayla's our math lead. So she and I have talked extensively about mathematics. At that time, math wasn't my background. So I just wanted to see if a lot of the ideas and principles worked. So he had on his board all this stuff about probability and frequency and permutation and arrangement and combination. And I just saw those and I'm like, those are concepts. So instead of his key points that he has on his board, I said, let me plug those concepts into our question stems. So what's the relationship between probability and frequency? What is the role of arrangement in permutation or whatever? You know, I just plugged him in and I just said, hey, what do you think about this? And he goes, yeah, I'll turn my board around. Because it was like one of those boards that was removable and I had written the questions on the back and he saw the value right away. And so to me, getting, like Kayla said, plan a week, getting even that day, like, what are you teaching right now? How about this? Getting teachers to play with it in the classroom. And so that when you mentioned the four levels of engagement with the book, some we were like, you know what? This is an eight chapter long book. Kayla wrote most of chapter eight. I don't know. By that time, we were so tired. I don't think anybody even proofread it. I think Kayla wrote it and it's it. That's it. It's Kayla. It's like we were just so tired, like rearranging, proofreading all this stuff. But I was like, teachers are going to live in chapter eight. They just skip all the rest and just go to chapter eight, start trying out some of those strategies in your classroom. And your students are going to blow your mind. I just did a call with a bunch of administrators of a huge school district up in Canada. And they were like, Julie, our teachers are so tired. How can we inspire them? What can we do? And I was like, here's my advice. Your goal is to have like an hour long, 45 minute long session and get them to try something in their classroom where students will blow their minds. And it can happen like tomorrow. If we just ask students, how are these concepts connected? Do a post-it note, you know, sort of arrangement concept map. How are these concepts connected? Of things you've already been talking about, of course, you can't just, you know, jump in with some words you've never used in class. But, you know, if anybody follows us on social media, you'll see teachers tag us. We had a huge one, a couple to this morning that we woke up to of just kids, just, what was that, Kayla? This morning was like grade four. Grade four students just linking all these incredible concepts and writing paragraphs about how they're connected. Yeah. Like try that tomorrow and your students are going to blow your mind.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think a lot of times we put the limits on them saying, well, they can't, right. They're not there yet. And so when you break those walls down and say, all right, here's our task. Show me what you can do. You know, I think that that's powerful. And I think your framework allows for that to happen everywhere. You know, now I have a question for Kayla. So you know, math teachers, you know, they have the burden of a lot of curriculum, a lot of content. And so a lot of the discussions that I've had with math specifically is I have so much that I have to get through that they're going to need for next year. This is important. They need to know it. So how do you kind of walk that line?
Sure. First, I acknowledge and honor they do have a lot of content. And depending on what standards or learning outcomes they have, it can be very fragmented. And I think it's honoring that, but it's also having that conversation with yourself of how much of what I'm teaching now do I think my students will actually remember next year because they need it. And that's where what we're saying is they don't have to get rid of some of their lessons or reinvent the wheel. It's just thinking about like that mindset shift of repackaging or repurposing. So instead of memorizing different topics each day or doing different procedures each day, looking for those organizing concepts, looking for those overarching skills that are really important and using that to package everything in a way that students, instead of trying to memorize different bits, they have something to hook it to. And so that's what we're really trying to promote. It's not that, no, you're only going to get through half your content because we're telling you to do this. We're going to help you get through the content, but in a way that's hopefully more meaningful and allow students to see those connections and be able to remember it next year. And so that's just taking a step back and thinking about, okay, what am I teaching in this unit or next week? What's that through line? What questions can I ask to help students make connections between what they're learning? And it's always this kind of false argument about the deeper understanding versus getting the answer right now. Well, to do a procedure, to get an answer right, they need to understand the concepts that are at play. And so they go together. and thinking about how can we connect those, how can those go together, and then we improve students' reasoning with the mathematics that they're doing. And so it's honoring, yes, you have a lot and you have a high demand field, you probably have some sort of standardized test that you have to get to, but what we're doing will help students retain the information and be able to use it in future situations because it's hooked together versus being a bunch of different pieces that are memorized. Mm-hmm. Like in chapter one, it's not math specific, but in chapter one, we use this awesome metaphor. Krista, our co-author, came up with this. It's beautiful. But if you think about the stars in the sky, we can't memorize all the stars in the sky. However, once you learn constellations, it's pretty hard to unsee the Big Dipper. And no matter where you are, and it was funny, we got to go to Brazil recently to share this work with others. And in the plane, I was like, oh, look, there's the Big Dipper. And it made me think about this. No matter where you are, you can orient yourself because you see those connections. And that's what we're doing with content. Instead of trying to memorize all the stars, which is unrealistic, all the facts or all the skills, we're helping students create this framework and this structure to where they can orient no matter what grade they're in, no matter what task they're approaching.
So you do that through, and you had touched on this before, through that ACT framework, which is a flexible framework. And, you know, it's so simple, but like so powerful. So if you could just explain a little bit about that framework.
Yeah, sure. So the first step, ACT stands for acquire, connect, transfer. So, you know, first students have to acquire understanding of individual concepts, and then they connect more two or more in relationship. And those connections are what facilitate transfer. And so that's, you know, the ACT model. And it's a mental model. It's a way of sort of seeing the world. And we called it the learning transfer mental model. And then we re-released this course right before the book manuscript was due, and everybody started calling it the ACT model, which is a much better way of saying it than the learning transfer mental model. But I do like that it's a mental model. It's a way of seeing the world, and that if we can train our students to see the world through concepts and their connections, we can train them to say, whoa, 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 I'm watching this TV show and I'm seeing tone and mood and, you know, suspense and all of these things that my English teacher is talking to me about. I'm seeing it in this, even a YouTube video, you know, whatever kids are really into, they can start to see concepts all around them. That is empowering, that gives agency, that puts students in the driver's seat, and that prepares them for an ever-changing world. So that's the core of learning that transfers, is the ACT model, affectionately known as the ACT model of acquire, connect, transfer.
So a lot of great stuff here. What would you say would be, if you had to pick one thing out of the entire book, aside from the ACT model, because we just talked about that, if you had to pick one thing out of the book that you would want teachers to take away, what would it be?
I think the question stems. It's something that with teachers, no matter what content or level, it can start promoting that idea of connection and transfer immediately. We don't have to change lesson plans. We don't have to reinvent anything. We can just take what's most important, plug those concepts into the questions, and then pose those questions over time and see what students are retaining, what they can apply and transfer to those new situations. So I think the question stems are just probably the most powerful way to get started. And from there, you can only go up.
Yeah, definitely. Those question stems are in all of my publications, including the On Your Feet Guide to Learning Transfer and Visible Learning for Social Studies. I was like, I'm going to see if, you know, John Hattie, Deb Fisher, and Nancy Fry are going to allow me to insert these in here. And they're like, yeah, these are great, because they just make sense. They point student attention to the deeper structural patterns. So for our listeners, in case you don't want to go click on that, it's simply, what's the relationship between this concept and this concept? It's a bunch of question stems because there's blanks. How does blank impact blank? And what goes in the blanks are concepts. And when you pose that to students, it points their attention to how the world is organized, how mathematics is organized, how physics is organized. That's the thing that, you know, is the easiest way to get kids to blow your mind is just to ask them how these concepts are connected. And then I would say, if one, my one thing, can we pick two since there's two people on the call?
Absolutely.
I was like, let me see what Kayla says. And then I'll just say something else just to kind of give two things. I think number one is to see the world through concepts. Just walk down the street and ask yourself, what concepts do I see? Watch a video, listen to a song, and ask yourself, what concepts are here? It makes life interesting. It's a fun activity to do with your students. It's a fun activity to do with your coworkers, where you just say, okay, here's a situation. Here's a story. Here's even something bad that happened. What concepts can you find here? And it's just a fun activity to sort of train ourselves to see the world through concepts, because ultimately it empowers students to train them to see the world through concepts. And guess what? They're better at it than us. So if we can do it, they definitely can do it, because they're younger and they're less, you know, the less sort of cognitive bias of our years on them. And so just asking them, play a fun video. I just try it so hard to get teachers to do this. Go to my YouTube channel, Julie Stern, and find the playlist that I have. They have a bunch of fun videos. I just collect them. Play a video as a warm-up, as a brain break, as an exit ticket, and ask your students, what concepts do you see in this video? And again, they're going to blow your mind. They're going to say really interesting things. And you then pick one or two that are super interesting and juicy and like unpack them. And that, I think that's just a fun exercise that I would say is my one thing I would want teachers to take away.
And I think with both of those examples, the most important thing is that it's not a ton of extra work for teachers.
Oh, amen.
Yeah. And if it's a lot of extra work, it's not going to be sustainable. They're not going to do it. So here are like some quick things that they can do tomorrow.
That's right.
You know, and I think that's just so important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're coming up on time. So I just want to give you a chance to touch on anything that you'd like to highlight, or maybe projects that you have coming up, anything that you'd like to discuss.
Sure. So I'm currently working on my dissertation that's using our model with Joanne Lobato's actor-oriented transfer perspective, which is looking at transfer from the student lens versus the teacher lens, and looking to see how students approach transfer tasks. So it's something I'm super excited about. I am doing it in the context of math, and we're looking at how teacher instructional moves. So using our model, it's creates kind of what Lobato calls the center of focus. And then that promotes what students are going to generalize or apply and transfer to new situations. And so we're looking at, okay, with our model, here we go, we're doing acquire, connect, transfer. We have these different strategies and the pedagogy that goes with it. And so then what's happening? What is the student approach? What are they thinking? What are they reasoning about? So I'm super excited to just dig more into that and see how it plays out. And we've had a ton of conversation with teachers about our model and what they've experienced in the classroom. And we've heard a little bit from students, but I'm just super excited to see what transfer looks like from their eyes and their perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I love Kayla's research. Is super exciting. And I always just have to put a plug that John Hattie is one of her thesis advisors. This is also what happens in the world of editing. I'm like, Kayla, let me ask him. You might say no, but he might say yes. And he said yes. She's like, oh gosh, he gives me tons of feedback, Julie. He's not like an honorary member. He's like, yes, I am going to read every word of your dissertation. So that's really exciting. We have a suite of online courses, and we're about to launch some micro courses. Just back to your point about if it's a lot of work, teachers aren't going to do it right now. The vast majority, some will, some enroll in our 8-week in-depth course and they're all in. But we are also about to launch some micro courses that are asynchronous, very low lift. Some of these strategies that we shared before, super affordable. And so, you know, if teachers just want to dip their toe into all of this, they should go to learningthattransfers.com and check out our online courses. And see some of the micro courses that we're going to be playing with soon.
That's awesome. All right. So tell people where they can connect with you, where they can get the book, where they can find the courses.
Yeah, I think the best way is learningthattransfers.com, because you can see, you know, all of that, our social, who we are, our social media handles, all that stuff, because we're a huge team. There's four of us who wrote the book, but then there's, we've got a PE lead, we've got a social studies lead, et cetera. And so you can get everybody's Twitter handle, depending on if you're elementary, things like that. You can just click on the about the team or something, team bios or something like that. But learningthattransfers.com, you can see our courses, you can see where our Twitter feed is. We've got a Facebook group called Conveniently Learning That Transfers. If people are on Facebook, if you're on Instagram or Twitter and LinkedIn, you know, all of those places, you can see most of that stuff on learningthattransfers.com.
And you have the Twitter community that just started. So
we just started.
What's the goal for that?
That's a very good question. I mean, you know, I even said to Kayla, I'm like the old lady already. I'm like, Kayla, what is a Twitter community? Is it like Facebook? Like, you know, so I think it's relatively new for Twitter even, right? So, you know, the way that our Facebook group works is just whoever wants to join. And it's just a cool, fun space. A lot of times we share what concepts you see here and things like that, share some of our resources. We sort of see like our newsletter. You will get the pop-up on our website if you want to join our newsletter. And you can download chapter one for free. That's kind of our pop-up, you know, thing right now. So if you want to join our newsletter, all of those things we do, like free resources, early access to resources, those types of things. So, you know, we share a lot on just, you know, if you just follow us on social media, but in those communities, we do give early access to a lot of stuff. And sometimes even answer questions. Teachers will say like, hey, I'm teaching a unit on immigration. Like, what resources do you guys have? That's how the Facebook community works. So I'm hopeful that that will start to happen on Twitter as well, because more educators are on Twitter than Facebook. So hopefully that's how it'll go. I don't know, Kayla, what do you think is the goal for the Twitter community?
It's, I think, just to grow the community. Like, transfer mm-hmm. is this broad idea that's been discussed for a while, and wanting to connect educators, researchers, people who are just interested in it, and keeping the conversation going in a platform that could reach a wider audience. Like Facebook, there are people on there, but I think Twitter is just to promote conversation, sharing of ideas, pushing each other's thinking in a space that's dedicated to that topic. So, you know, like, oh, I can go to this community and look at all these different things, where sometimes I don't know what the algorithm's doing on different days. Like, I see some things one day and I don't see it like for another month.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just a space to create that network and hopefully reach even more people and learn together.
All right. Well, congratulations on all the success. It's so well deserved.
Thank you.
Everything you're putting out there is just awesome. So I encourage everybody to get the book. All right. It is awesome. All right. Connect with them. They're very accessible. I see you on Twitter all the time. So they're not just saying this, they do love connecting with educators. So get in touch with them, check out their website. And thank you for joining me.
For sure. Thanks a lot, Dave. Same to you about everything.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening. I look forward to hearing your feedback. For more resources, visit www.reimagineschools.com or reach out to me on Twitter @DavidFrangiosa.